Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:43 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time, and today is August 27th. Well, it was a big day in the bond markets today. You can see that the long bond, for example, was up 6 basis points, the 10-year up 2, 5-year up 1, but even in Europe, the Bund, for example, was up a basis point. Now, it's obviously still got negative interest rate or negative yields and indeed interest rates in the Eurozone. But what we saw from Jackson Hole in here today was that the Federal Reserve is abandoning the way that it looks at inflation, and they are moving to an average inflation rate, and they're targeting 2% for that average. Now, obviously, when you calculate an average, I haven't seen any commentary yet on how much data they want to look at. Is it going to be 6 months or a year of data? Is it an annualized figure? So that's going to be one of the determinations. But when we look at the charts for bonds, well, let's first look at the 30-year, because the 30-year bond is obviously very acutely sensitive to inflationary pressures. It's now yielding 1.5%. It has steadied quite well from the lows put in April and again in early August. Today was a reasonably dynamic move. It is closing in on the region of the trend mean. And the clear potential here is that we're going to see it get up to at least 1.75%, but 2% is the big psychological level. It's the I think it's where investors would really begin to consider that inflation is back on the table, not just in the short term, but potentially in the medium term. And of course, with the Fed adopting an average of inflation measures, well, that greatly increases the potential that they are going to run the economy hot. Of course, when they run the economy hot, what it also means is that they have not come up with an answer about what they're going to do with money supply when the velocity of money picks back up. A lot of economists have been arguing that the $3 trillion that had been printed by the Federal Reserve, plus the additional money that had been provided by other central banks around the world, wasn't really stimulus, because it really reflected the collapse in demand. So it was a stopgap measure. But it's only a stopgap measure for as long as that collapse in demand lasts. And when you have velocity of money collapsing, and admittedly, this measure is not updated all that often, but it really did pull back extraordinarily sharply in the first portion of this year, and it has been trending downwards since 1997. But this is a clear acceleration of that trend. So you can then print as much money as you want, as long as velocity of money is going down, on the understanding that you are going to take some of that money out of circulation when the when velocity of money begins to pick back up, because without doing that, you're clearly stoking inflation. Now, the size of the Fed's balance sheet rose modestly last week. It's back up to about $7 trillion. When we look at M2, which is the other side of the velocity of money factor, then it's back at its all-time highs. So there's no evidence that the Federal Reserve is beginning to withdraw the liquidity. There is the potential that velocity of money is picking up. We've certainly seen that online sales have been doing well, that home sales have been doing well. Of course, the home sales are doing well against a background of very limited supply, because people are just not selling their homes, or they've withdrawn their homes from the market. So it's a rather artificial set of data that we're getting at the moment. But what we have seen is that people are beginning to become more accustomed to the economic environment that we have right now, and that should help economic activity to pick up. And then, of course, if we think about the bond market, maybe this time look at the 10-year, well, what we have is a range. and ranges are explosions waiting to happen. And this looks like a base formation. Now, of course, it's not the first time that Bondeals have looked like a base formation. It really looked like a base formation between 2012 and approximately 2018. And then we had the pop above 3%, and that really did look like it was the end of the bull market. Well, that was obviously not correct, and now we've seen yields collapse all the way through 2019 and into 2020. Now, the bigger question is, everyone was convinced that we were going to go into negative yields at the end of March, beginning of April. Well, we haven't had that. The yield around 50 basis points has held, and there is the potential now that we're going to unwind the overextension relative to the trend mean. So bonds do look susceptible to additional weakness from here, and the futures price could easily shave 4 points off the price and still then just be unwinding the overextension relative to the trend mean. What I found really quite interesting was gold was in negative territory in here today. It was down $22, still holding that $1,900 area, and I think investors are still on the fence. They haven't really been able to or had the time yet to figure out what to do. But the reality is that if the Federal Reserve is going to run the economy hot and target inflation rates greater than 2%, that incentivizes anybody to front-load a purchase, most particularly of financial assets, because their price will inflate at least at the rate of inflation. And that's particularly relevant for gold, because they are basically telling us that they're not going to raise interest rates, and they're going to erode the amount of debt through inflation. So this is outright financial repression. That's perhaps the most bullish argument for being in gold. And I do think that investors are going to come around to that consideration in the not too distant future. So we have seen that gold has steadied from the $1,900 area. I don't think that we're going to see gold come all the way down to $1,700, but we may see some additional volatility as we get this to and fro give way to the obvious conclusion that if we are going to have inflation, it means that the currency in your pocket is going to be worth less. Stock market investors don't need that convincing. The S&P 500 was in positive territory again in here today and continues to extend its advance. The NASDAQ 100 has paused around the 12,000 level. Of course, there is one little piece of uncertainty. It's with regard to Apple. They are going to go through the, I think it's 4-for-1 split tomorrow. So then that's obviously something that's going to weigh on investor sentiment in the short term, because the price is going to go down to $125. And then, of course, it's weighting in some of the price-weighted indices like the Dow will decline. It won't have as much determination on the NASDAQ or the S&P 500 because they're both market cap weighted, and the split will do nothing in terms of the market cap. But the question is, have people been buying it in anticipation of this event, or have they been waiting until after the event to buy? So I think when we look at the acceleration, where it has gone from 350 to 500 in the space of about 4 weeks, I think we can answer that question by people have been buying in advance of this decision, and it perhaps now suggests that we are due consolidation here, and not least that $500 is a logical area where people should ask what's next. When we then think about Europe, well, Europe is certainly printing more money, and the euro should strengthen against the dollar over the medium term, although it is due consolidation in the short term. they still have negative interest rates. They're still trying to achieve an inflation rate, but they're not printing as much as the US is doing, and they don't have the same technology weighting. So the stock market is underperforming somewhat. It's quite difficult, though, to find a Europe growth fund. If you type Europe growth into Google, then you're not presented with a lot of potential options. There are a couple in Luxembourg, and there's one in Europe. I thought that the Baillie Gifford one was is one of the better performers, in fact, and that one is really quite overextended in the short term. It's doubled since March, so it's due some consolidation, but at least it's an uptrend. And the problem for a lot of Eurovision, because of the obvious clear potential that we are going to have a. I'm going to stop the recording. Now I think I'm back on. That's quite. I don't know what exactly happened in terms of my recording. It does appear to have stopped. I don't know if that stopped the audio recording versus the video recording, so I do apologize for the intermittency. When we look at Europe, it's been going sideways. Now, when we look at what the potential is in Europe, they're moving towards cohesion at a glacial pace, but they are moving towards that. And the creation of a federal budget and federal debt markets is another big step towards it, and it represents an additional 700 billion in spending power for Europe as a whole. So we are moving increasingly towards a federal solution for Europe. Eventually, they're going to have to close some of their tax loopholes. They're going to have to really start to think about what it means to have a pan-European financial sector. As a dyed-in-the-wool libertarian, I think the UK has probably made the right decision to get out of that because this is going to be a difficult environment for national parliaments, and national parliaments are going to find they have less and less to do over time, and there hasn't been a clear delineation of what the benefits are going to be, but as we move progressively towards a federal solution, then that should remove some uncertainties for companies, and they should start to benefit also from economic activity globally. Now, when we start to think about global activity, well, the continuous commodity index is now back above 400. Now, it ranged mostly above 400 between 2016 and 2018, and then it got wobbly in 2019 and collapsed in 2020. But with the quantity of money that's been printed and the fact that we've got synchronized global economic contraction this year, it's very likely we're going to have synchronized global economic expansion next year. The bar is very low to achieve that, and that suggests that commodities should do well. When we then think about the shipping sector, there are still a large number of ships that are shipping companies that are making new lows, but the Baltic Dry Index has at least steadied around 1500. It's had a number of failed upside breaks through 2000. If it can sustain a move above that level, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. When we think about, for example, one of the better performers like Maersk, then it has rebounded in pretty emphatic fashion. It had the failed break up out of its range at the end of last year. Then it had the failed break down out of its range at the beginning of this year, and we're back now testing the 10,000 crown level. So there is the scope, at least, that we may get some consolidation, but it, as long as it's holding the region of the trend mean, then there's the potential for additional upside. And again, this has been a very difficult decade for shipping. And even for the most successful shipping companies, they have had an extraordinary volatile time. But they did do reasonably well in the period from late 1990s through until the credit crisis. And even in the aftermath of the credit crisis, moved on to a new high in 2014. The imposition of the IMO 2020 regulations has obviously been enormously disruptive. So that has created a lot of change and a lot of junking of old ships. There's the potential that we're looking at a supply inelasticity meets rising demand environment for global shipping. I do think also that oil is looking rather interesting. Now, obviously, there is a very large hurricane hitting Louisiana, so it did skirt the big refining centers in Texas. Oil prices were in negative territory in here today. If we move back into a period of synchronized global economic expansion, then that's quite positive for demand for oil. What is interesting is that investors are not willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the oil companies, and they were pretty much all in negative territory again in here today. But if oil prices continue to hold the $40 area, then that looks a lot better for oil companies than $20 did. And some of these companies have never cut their dividend. Chevron has been paying a dividend for over 100 years. Now, obviously, if it were to cut the dividend, that would be negative. And we know what happened with Royal Dutch Shell when they cut their dividend. And the share has come all the way back down to test the 1,000p level. But if oil prices hold this area, and there's the potential that oil prices will respond favorably to inflationary pressures, then there is the scope that oil companies can do better. Now, obviously, there is massive uncertainty around the prospect of a Green New Deal and what that is going to mean for oil companies. So then they also represent a potential play on the US election. We already have a Green New Deal that's been imposed in Europe, so that's a particular weight for European energy companies. But it's not quite the same in the USA, or at least not yet. So I do think this is a sector to pay attention to, and not least because it is one of the few sectors in the world that is still right on its lows. That was the same argument for getting interested in gold 2 years ago, because it was still in its base formation, and it was hard to convince anybody to be interested in it. And then we had prices come all the way back down to the 2018 lows in March, and now gold shares continue to hold this little series of ranges, one above another. Now, it was also in negative territory today, and I really think that this is temporary. I think what some people are paying attention to is the tips yield and the correlation that we've had between gold and the compression in the tips yield over the course of the last while. Well, obviously, tips yields have not been continuing lower for most of August. That has corresponded with the consolidation that we're seeing in gold. But I think the bigger picture here is that tips have been are a particularly illiquid market, and the bigger question is whether they really can achieve the kind of inflation hedge that they're supposed to offer. Gold is certainly another potential market that should do well, and stocks are also likely to benefit from inflation. The Federal Reserve signaled today that we are back in an inflationary cycle because they're going to do whatever it takes to get back on an inflation footing. And that literally means leaving trillions in circulation until they get the answer that they want. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.